Receiving semen from Maharaj Chitraketu, the king of Surasena, Queen Krityaduti gradually developed in her pregnancy, O King Parikshit, just as the moon develops during the bright fortnight. Thereafter, in due course of time, a son was born to the king. Hearing news of this, all the inhabitants of the state of Surasena were extremely pleased. King Chitraketu was especially pleased after purifying himself by bathing and decorating himself with ornaments. He engaged learned Brahmins in offering benedictions to the child and performing the birth ceremony. Unto the Brahmins who took part in the ritualistic ceremony, the king gave charity of gold, silver, garments, ornaments, villages, horses, and elephants, as well as 60 crores of cows, 600 million cows. As a cloud indiscriminately pours water on the earth, the beneficent King Chitraketu, to increase the reputation, opulence, and longevity of his son, distributed like rainfall all desirable things to everyone. When a poor man gets some money after great difficulty, his affection for the money increases daily. Similarly, when King Chitraketu, after great difficulty, received a son, his affection for the son increased day after day. The mother's attraction and attention to the son, like that of the child's father, excessively increased. The other wives, seeing Krityaduti's son, were very much agitated, as if by high fevers, with a desire to have sons. As King Chitraketu fostered his son very carefully, his affection for Queen Krityaduti increased, but gradually he lost affection for the other wives who had no sons. The other queens were extremely unhappy due to their being sonless. Because of the king's negligence towards them, they condemned themselves in envy and lamented. Okay, so this is the first one, 40. Dhig aprajam
striyam
papam patyush chagriha sammatam suprajadihi Sapatnibhir Dasim Iva Tiraskritam Dig Aprajam Sriyam Papam Pratyus Chagriha Sammatam Suprajadhi Sapatnibhir Dasim Iva Tiraskritam Dig all condemnation. Aprajam, without a son. Striyam, upon a woman. Papam, full of sinful activities. Pratyuhu, by the husband. Cha, also. Agriha sammatam, who is not honored at home. Suprajabihi, who have sons. Sapatnibihi, by co-wives. Dasim, Vasya, a maidservant. Eva,
Eva,
exactly like.
Tiraskritam,
dishonored. Translation. A wife who has no sons is neglected at home by her husband and dishonored by her co-wives, exactly like a maidservant. Certainly such a woman is condemned in every respect because of her sinful life. Purport. As stated by Chandramukhi Pandit, Mata yasya grihe nashti, bharya chapi avarini, aranyam tena gantavyam, yatharanyam tatagriham. A person who has no mother at home and whose wife does not speak sweetly should go to the forest. For such a person, living at home and living in the forest are equal. Similarly, for a woman who has no son, who is not cared for by her husband, and whose co-wives neglect her, treating her like a maidservant, to go to the forest is better than to remain home. So the whole purpose of life in the material world is to somehow or another find a favorable situation in which to serve Krishna. That is what we're trying to establish. We're trying to find a good situation in which we can remember the Lord, in which we can engage ourselves very nicely in the activities the Lord serves, according to our conditioned nature. So that situation should be favorable, in that we can remember the Lord, we can absorb our mind, and where, you know, things are taken care of, mind is peaceful, the situation is pleasant, and we're able to properly engage ourselves in the Lord's service. So then here, it's given two situations that for the husband, if the mother is not at home, or the wife does not speak very nicely and deal very nicely in the home, better for him to go to the forest. Because the whole idea of the Grihastha Ashram is so that everything works very nicely so that both husband and wife can remember the Lord. But if there's so much friction and disturbance, then better go to the forest. Because at least in the forest, you only have yourself. And then there's, you know, less problem. You only have to worry about a few tigers and bears, but whatever. But otherwise, then life is more peaceful. Because the whole idea is if the mind is not peaceful, you can't remember the Lord. If there's not peace, there's no happiness. Krishna makes that in Gita. And you can't be peaceful unless the senses are controlled and engaged nicely. Your senses, according to their nature, are engaged in the Lord's service. The mind is peaceful. And when the mind is peaceful, then we're able to engage in the Lord's service. So the mind must be peaceful. Or also here, then for the woman, that she doesn't have a son, she's not cared for by the husband, or who others in the family, the co-wives or other family members neglect her, there's no benefit of the household ashram. So better she goes to the forest. Because then at least the mind will be more peaceful. So the whole situation is trying to find a situation, that one is trying to find that situation in which one is trying to be God conscious. So if the relationships in your situation are nice and properly working, then this makes it favorable for devotional service. So the whole idea is we need to understand our nature and understand our relationship with others and then behave properly. Now we see here, this difficulty has come because of improper performance of duties, right? It means the husband shouldn't be neglecting the wife, and the wife shouldn't be behaving badly with the husband. But because of neglect of duty, it creates an improper situation, an imbalance in the situation. So both the husband and wife, they must behave properly. They must know what is the relationship and how to deal. And when that is there, then things go peacefully. Of course, nothing in the material world is actually peaceful. I mean, if it was, then you wouldn't have the Brahma bodies who are trying like anything to get out of here. You know, to just get rid of anything that has to do with, you know, shape, form, smell, touch, or taste. Because even when he has tried the best perfect situations, it's still a problem. It's still difficult. Right? We even see Lord Shiva and Parvati. They are the origin of all other males and females in the universe. So they are perfectly matched. And they even have difficulties. So that's just the way the material world is. The best situation always still has problems. But it should be a situation in which it is tolerable, in which one can absorb oneself into the thinking of Krishna. Like that. Otherwise, if it's too much, one can't do the service at all or anything, then it's a disturbance. So if someone performs their duties properly, then there's no disturbance to others. So we can see here, this husband, it mentions here, extraordinary, excessively increased the mother's and father's attraction and attention to the child excessively increased. So it's too much. If it had been balanced, no one else would be disturbed. Because it was excessively, the time that should have been given to the whole family, the husband was only given to the wife and son. And he was neglecting everyone else. So because of that, then this disturbance comes up. And then these co-wives are feeling very bad. Of course, they're also looking at it from their own. It means we see in the situation here, everyone is looking at it from their own perspective. Husband, it's his duty. He has a son. He can save the forefathers and all that. As the king, he's supposed to do these things. So he's very happy that can be done. But that's a duty. But we see excessive attachment is more than duty. Because excessive attachment is never good. It's never good for anyone. Neither the father, the mother, husband, wife, the child. It's never good for any of them. Because excessive attention means illusion is there. And in illusion, it can't be proper. So one has to, there must always be some restraint, some control, some balance. So if he's happy, he's had the son, he's giving in charity, at that point there's no complaint. Everybody's happy. It doesn't say everyone was happy except for the, you know, what is it? Was it 999,999 co-wives. It doesn't say that. It says everybody was happy. But then, as their excessive attachment grew, then these other members of the family became dissatisfied. Like that. But no one was complaining that they had a son, because then it means the kingdom goes on, you know, everything, all the dharma is going to be, he's such a nice king, his son will be very good, he'll be trained very nicely by the king, and then everything will go on nicely. The citizens are happy, everybody else is happy. Like this. But because of excessive attachment, we see the same trouble with Bhutanapada, Maharaj Bhutanapada. He was excessively attached to one of the queens. And because of that, then when she behaved improperly, she was acting not according to the etiquette, he wouldn't say anything because it is excessive attachment. So excessive attachment is never good. There's no situation that's good. Attachment is naturally there, but one has to see, balance that attachment with the reality. Attachment is there, one works with the thing very nicely. But the attachment is only to be so much that you are able to engage in the Lord's service. The attachment is more that you forget duty, forget the Lord's service. That's not true. That becomes a problem. So because of that here, then the other members of the family are disturbed. And they also being, you know, excessively attached, you know, to their position in that, then they are speaking. Yeah, envy and lamented. So this is ignorance. Envy, lamentation, these are elements of ignorance. So they were very much thinking, you know, they're going to get a great deal out of this whole thing, and they're going to enjoy and everything, and they're seeing it's not happening. Of course, child grows a little bit, this, that, and it goes down. You know, most all this is for some short time, then one has to get back to the realities of the thing. But because they're feeling the pain now, they're not seeing over this longer term. And they've already forgotten about the purpose of the sun, the forefathers and the kingdom going on and the Kshatriya duties, and now they're worried about themselves. So because of this, then they're speaking so many things. So they're also, so we see here a very nice example of where the king is not performing his duties nicely, and these queens are not performing their duties nicely. Because they should be happy. The husband wanted his son, and now he has his son, they should be happy. But because he's not performing his duties nicely, then they forget their duties, and then the whole thing becomes a disturbance. So this is... says the son and by the co-wives exactly like a maidservant. This is also improper, because the maidservants are helping very, very nicely. So any proper wife, then she understands her duties, that her duties are going on nicely because of the assistance. So then she'll always deal very, very properly. So this is also ego. So we see here the whole thing of ego. The ego is improper. When Angira came and then explained, you know, just explain the first thing he said after saying, "Are you happy and nice and everything's going nicely?" Then he mentioned that the mahatattva, the ego, and the sense objects, if these are all in order, then everything works nicely. So we see here is the ego has gotten out of order. And because of this, now we will see everybody will become unhappy. Now the co-wives are unhappy. But with time, then the king and Kritiduti will become unhappy. So there's an imbalance there. So before there was an imbalance because his identity, I as a king, this, that, so many things, I don't have the son. So he's got the son, he'll still be in the same place. So Angira is pointing out to him that it doesn't matter what the situation, if you're not remembering the Lord, you won't be happy. It means it's, he would have had all abilities to have a son, but he didn't. Somehow or another. But he's not accepting that. And he's getting overly distressed, which is unnecessary. So now he's becoming overly happy. So Gita says one should avoid this. So much lamentation when there's unhappiness, and so much jubilation when there's happiness in the situation. So he's breaking both of these. And they're both because of ego. Like the ego of the mind. You think, this will make me happy, I get it, I'm happy. This won't make me happy, I get that, I'm not happy. So this is the situation. So any questions on this? Yes. What does someone do if they have excessive attachment? It means one has to analyze what is actually going on. It means, what is the attachment? It means that we're in the material world, that already is a sign of excessive attachment. So it's like you can take that for granted that that would be there. You know? So now we're looking for excessive attachment. Like, so we look for where we find our attachments are. And that we can either see by where we're overly happy, where we're overly hankering, or where we're overly lamenting, you know, or overly jealous, envious, these things. These are generally the key areas, because it's connected with the ego. It means unless there's a lot of passion and ignorance, it can't be excessive attachment. There has to be ignorance, for one, that you can get overly attached to something, because it's dead matter anyway. So the living entity has to be covered sufficiently to get overly attached to the dead matter. Right? The son, he's not, you know, happy that, you know, they've got this particular soul. Because as it is in his family, he already has 10 million souls, right? But so it's that it has a male body. So he's attached to that body. He's not attached to the soul of the body. Right? He's just attached to the body. So there has to be some covering to get that. So wherever we find that there's this excessive over dealings, over reactions, over emotions, over hankering, that just those are the areas. Then we have to see them and then figure out what it is, why, you know, what is the benefit? What do I actually gain from it? If I'm overly attached to something, you know, like I have a bag, I'm overly attached to my bag. What is the benefit? You know, what is the reason I like this bag? You know, what is special about this bag that I like it better than all other bags? You know, so then one has to go through and analyze, and one sees it's not actually anything of substance. You know, and many times the reasons for it may be ego. It's a nice bag. Others will say, oh, they have nice bags. You know, you're respected because you have nice things. You know, or, you know, it does so many things for us. Or, you know, some other sentimental like this. So we have to see what it is and then analyze. And then by analyzing it, then it takes away some of the mystique of it. And then we see that it's not proper. So we just have to do that. That's the whole process of devotional service, is analyzing all the different things that we do, why we do them. What is our motive behind it? Why do we do what we do? But we always must come out positive. It's a very important element, this Dhanya Bodhika, where the devotee laments their improper consciousness, improper situation, improper ability to engage in devotional service. Then they are not, everything's not finished, because Krishna's there. And the process is perfect, and Krishna is helping us to become perfect, and the acharyas are there. Krishna sent everything so we can become perfect. So that lamentation is just we're not able to properly engage in devotional service. But we know that the service is so powerful, the name is so powerful, association with devotees is so powerful. Now, even someone has fallen as ourselves, if we continue in that, we will get all benefit. So we have faith in the process, in Krishna, in the process, the holy name, in the devotees, in the scriptures. So though we may not have faith in ourselves, but we have faith in the scriptures. Material lamentation means we don't have faith in anything. We have at least a little faith in ourselves. But when we find that ourselves doesn't have any good quality, we give up everything. And then one contemplates suicide, so many other things. Right? So generally someone is dealing with someone who's trying to commit suicide, he has to give him a little hope. Right? He has to find something that they can cling on to, that their identity can relate to, and then that will keep them here. Otherwise they want to go. But for the devotee, he doesn't have this problem, because this problem is the material platform. With a spiritual platform, we don't have faith in ourselves, because we're the, you know, foolish one who left the spiritual realm. But Krishna and all his devotees and everything is so wonderful. They're coming here to collect us. Right? They're not thinking these guys are write-offs, so therefore we won't go and pick them up or anything. You know, they're coming here. They take great pleasure in coming here. So one has to be very, very careful that in seeing our own faults, we don't fall into material lamentation. When we see in the songs of the acharyas or the prayers of the acharyas that they're lamenting their fallen position, that's not material lamentation. Right? They have no way to give up. Right? Because you see in the progress of their songs or their prayers, they start with that. They glorify the Lord, that he's so wonderful, and then they say how useless they are. Then they go on and step by step just go through and how if we do like this and like that, and then they naturally take it up to a advanced platform. Because that's the way it is. It's always like that. Right? You know, you have something that's dirty, it's fallen in the mud, you can lament that it's in the mud, but you know, you think it's bad and I shouldn't drop it in the mud again. But you just go in the process of washing it off and it's clean. You have faith in the process.
But if you lament material lamentations, fall into the mud and everything's finished and that, you roll on the ground in the mud yourself and that's it. What's spiritual is we see how it is that this has come about and how to avoid it. And that we're such fools that we keep doing it again and again and again. So we pray to Krishna, we pray to Guru, we pray to Vaishnavas that we won't do this again. And gradually, gradually, gradually practice, it'll stop. Though it takes time. Because we've been making, you know, mistake after mistake for a long time. You know, lifetimes. So now, in this lifetime, we're trying to stop that. So it'll take a little. Just like something very big and heavy is moving, it takes a little while to stop it. Because it's just the momentum of the movement. So all these desires that we have in this life, they are created from our activities in previous lives. And what we do this life. So these desires and these hankerings and lamentings, these bother us very much. You know, actually more than the physical disturbances that come. So then, those are coming from previous activity. Because an activity creates the physical reaction or the mental reaction, you know, the pain or pleasure that you get. But it also creates the desire for more of that activity. Right? You understand? It means like, let's say we do some sinful activity. That will give us a reaction. Physical, mental, both. Right? The subtle and gross body will be affected by the sinful reaction coming from that. It will, but also we will be affected by further increased desire to enjoy that sinful activity. So it creates both. So it's not just we did the activity, it's over, and then the reaction comes, you know. But also the desire to do more of that comes. And that's the dangerous thing. The reaction that comes, that you can get rid of by prayaschitta. But that's not the real problem. The real problem is that desires that will come up. Even if there's no reaction, those desires will come up again. And then we're going to again do. And then again we'll be faced with the reaction, again with more increased desires. So we have to be very careful. So we just, lamentations should not go to this extreme. Because it's all hope. It means the material world has nothing to offer. Spiritual world has everything to offer. We simply have to bide our time here and engage ourselves, you know, in suitable activities according to our nature and according to our needs to get us through this lifetime, whatever that means, you know, whatever situation we need to situate ourselves in, whatever facilities we need, this and that. But we're only putting that together for long enough for that. Like Prabhupada gives the example of someone moves into a house. And in 1 week you have to move out of that house. You will only set it up just enough to live in that house for that week. You will not, you know, go and repaint the walls or do all kinds of things. You won't do that. You know, you don't set yourself up for lifetimes. You just set yourself up what you need for this, according to your nature. That much only, not a bit more. And as one finds that one needs something less by maturity and devotional service or situations, then one reduces that. Another thing just came up with duty. See, duty means that we perform these relationships. Like here, the husband is giving attention to the wife. The wife is dealing properly with the husband. These are duties. So how much attachment is there or not, that is not the issue. This is the duty that must be done. Must be done. Now, naturally, dealing with anything in the material world, some attachment is there. You deal with anything, you become attached to it. It's just it's common. Like that. Like, you go to a place, let's say you go someplace, and there'll be some meetings. There's going to be 3 days of meetings. The first time you come in the room, then you look around, you find a seat. Now, if that seat was fine, you didn't feel any discomfort there, or you didn't see that another seat would be better. Every time you come in the room, you go to that seat. And if someone else is sitting there, you feel, hey, that's my seat. So attachment is like that. That's just, that is the meaning of the living entity in the material world. But excessive attachment is bad. So a little attachment may be there. One deals. So one has to give. So it's not maya. The husband gives attention to the wife. The wife gives there. The parents give to the children. It's not maya. If it's done in duty, respectfulness, proper interaction, done means one individual serving Krishna to another. But if it's done for sense gratification, means the motive is sense gratification, then there's a problem. Then there'll be dissatisfaction. But by doing duties, automatically there's dissatisfaction. It comes. So one just has to see that it is not, it is done how much it is to make it work. And that there's satisfaction. More than that's not, than not good. Okay? Anything else?
Yes. This number of 10 million lives, I mean, when you take the Bhagavatam literally, that's almost seem like an allegorical figure.
Well, this is in another age also. You know? But here, when they say this much, don't mean that much. This is why it's such a, you know, exceptional stories. It means there's others with one or two wives, or means Dasara had 303 wives. You only hear about the three main wives, but there he had 300 other wives we don't even hear about. They weren't maidservants, they were co-wives. And then the maidservants are more. You know, you had Devaki, she had 2,000 maidservants. So that means there's one queen and 2,000 maidservants. So technically they're all married to the king. But just there means the queen's son can become the king. The maidservant's son can't. Like that. But they're all involved. Like that. So, and that's one queen. So then you have all of them have maidservants. So it's just, you know, it's definitely, this is not a Kali Yuga story. You know, this is most likely a Treta Yuga or something that had a little more time. But we take it that why not? I mean, it's just, the point is it shows the excessiveness of which he was desiring a son. And that he would marry 10,000 girls with the desire for a son. Because that was the motive when the son wasn't there, therefore he neglected them. Right? It's duty. As a king, he's seeing as it is duty as a king to have a son. So the queen should have the son. So that he's marrying so many queens. But in Krishna consciousness, it's a completely different. We're not worried. We don't have to worry about the son for the forefathers and this and that. That's not. We don't do that. We're not. Those things don't matter to us at all. Our point is that we may find ourselves that the Grihastha Ashram is the best situation for us to perform our Krishna consciousness. So then, one is marrying somebody not who's going to produce a son, but marrying someone in who you're going to share Krishna conscious experience and endeavor with. So it's a very different approach. So because of this, therefore, the co-wives are dissatisfied, and he and his and the main wife is going to be dissatisfied. Because the whole thing actually is mundane. Because up to this point, it's everything is just perfect dharma. But it's being misdone because it's material. Materially, you never have perfect dharma. Because you see, anyone who is perfect is a devotee. Lord Ramachandra, you know, that's perfect dharma. Yudhishthira, that's perfect dharma. Prithu, that's perfect dharma. Chituketu, he is not being an example of dharma here. He's a great king, he's doing everything very, very properly, he's very qualified, his senses are very happy, he's emperor of the world. But that is not the thing. It's after his son dies, and then Narada and Angira bring him back to life and he preaches philosophy. That's when he becomes a devotee. Then he becomes advanced. So then, that's where we take Chitraketu seriously, is at that point. You know, so here he's just a very nice guy. You know, that's all. Like King Riga. Very, very nice person. But he had to become a devotee. When they become devotees, then he's very, very nice. They're already trained. They have culture, they have knowledge, and now they're devotees. So it's a perfect combination. Like that. Yes.
is there any limit how much attachment we have to Guru and Krishna? No, because that's unlimited. But we have to see that that attachment is not sentimental. It means sentiment's always there, but it has to be a balance, because our whole process is invoking the devotional sentiment. But we have to make sure that the material sentiment is not our motive. Material sentiment will be engaged as long as we have the attachment for the material material nature. By performance of duty, our material sentiment is engaged and satisfied. That's the purpose of Varnashram Dharma, is to engage our material sentiment and our senses in a favorable way that can be used in the Lord's service. That's the purpose of Varnashram. Other than that, we don't accept it. That's why you see sometimes Varnashram is glorified very much. Because if you use it like that, it's the best system for engaging the emotions and the senses in the Lord's service. Like that, there's no better way for someone who has these attachments. But if one doesn't use it in the Lord's service, we don't have anything to do with it. It's useless. I mean, it's nice, it's highest, better people do that than the animals. You know, human life is meant for at least being a human. So human beings are an ashram. But its only purpose for us as devotees is that it engages, it gives a forum or a form to our engagement of our emotions and senses in the Lord's service. So one has to be very careful that one is not just engaging the emotional side only. Being, even one is, it's still, if it's engaged in the service of the Lord, one makes a benefit. But the problem is that it may disturb others. Krishna may not be disturbed, Guru may not be disturbed. We may not be disturbed, but others are disturbed. When others are disturbed, then Guru and Krishna won't be satisfied. And then all that happens, and we're not satisfied. And then we wonder what's going on. Right? You understand? I mean, it's just like this. We want to serve Guru in a certain way. So if we can do that and not disturb others, that's proper. But now, if by doing our service we bother everybody else, you know, like there, we want to offer some flowers and push everybody out of the way, and we get there and we've done the box and stand there and offer prayers and this and that, and everybody else has just said, hey, you know, can we move out of the way? You know, that is over sentiment. You know? So it disturbs everyone. So it's not really satisfying to the Lord like that. Is that making sense? So one has to balance, because of culture, we must live with others. So we must accept that others have their needs and their everything themselves. Then, so that's what the actual Varnashram system is for. Here Chitraketu has fallen from the platform. Minor, but he's fallen from the platform. You know? This is the, so for the devotee, he is situated on this platform by devotional service. He's situated in goodness. Like taking up devotional service, you're automatically in goodness. But because of our lack of purity, goodness means it has passion and ignorance mixed. So depending on the degree of those passion and ignorance, then we will be below the standard. So the whole process of devotional service is to clear that passion of ignorance so that we become situated in pure goodness. So in that process, we take help from the sadhana bhakti and from varnashram to give a form so that we deal properly ourselves and with others. Anything else? Yes.
Yes. So why is it
Why the whole arrangement that we even have husbands and wives for ourselves? See, the point is that we don't actually need. It means we are Prakriti Krishna's Purusha. And so all we need is love for Krishna and that service to Krishna. We don't actually need any of this here. But the problem is because of our conditioning, we identify with the body. And depending upon the variety of the identity, we're attached to some aspect. We're attached to study. We're attached to the duties of the Grihastha Ashram. We're attached to the retirement from that, or slowing down and pulling back, or we're attached to detachment. So there's some attachment there. So depending upon what is best for us, we situate ourselves there. And then we slowly, by using those situations according to the rules in devotional service, then we give up those attachments. I mean, a sannyasi has to give up his attachment to detachment. Because everything is Krishna's. That doesn't, but he follows the rules. He doesn't engage in anything in sense gratification. But one of the motives is his attachment to detachment. He just doesn't want to deal with anything. So that is also an attachment. You know, the Grihastha wants to, you know, deal with everything. You know, the Vanaprastha is kind of like in between. Okay, I had enough of this and a little bit of this, kind of like in between. You know, the Brahmacharya is, you know, get what I can so I can work out which direction I go. You know, so I have all facilities, right? You know, all options are open. So when husband and wife marry, you're only marrying the gross and subtle bodies. You're not marrying the souls. The souls aren't married. The bodies and subtle bodies are married. And so there's duties that the gross and subtle bodies have to go through. And by going through that in a regulated fashion, one starts to separate oneself from that identity of the body and the mind. See, as it is in the beginning, even as devotees, we theoretically understand we're not the body. But we have attachment for the body and the mind. So when the mind says this and that, we think this is what I want. It's not. That's what the mind. The mind is a different living entity. It has nothing to do with us. We've just been listening to it for unlimited lifetimes. But it's a different element. It's a material element that's separate from us. It can think whatever it likes. What do we care? You know, just like in the next room, you have a raving madman. They can say whatever they like. And we don't care. You know, sometimes you may want to shut the door. But it doesn't bother us. It doesn't mean what they say is what we have to do. So by regulation, you lose your attachment. Right? Because we're attached and we get it immediately, how much we want, go for it, however we, then it just increases. But by regulating, then we start to see, hey, I can function without this. Or I can function in this way or that way. And then you start to see that body and the mind are actually separate. Then one is doing these things out of duty, because one still has, one has to completely purify that. And when one's purified that on the Grihastha Ashram, the Vanaprastha naturally comes. It's just a natural step.
It would be also very helpful if one has two wives, then they have to share the husband, they can have
one. It depends on the situation. It's recommended for someone who's really serious in spiritual life to stick to one. You know, you say that's the recommendation. But in Varnashram one can have more, but one has to be able to take care of them. That doesn't mean that you stick both of them in some little dinky flat. It means that each have to have their own flat. So if you can take care of that, fine. Then you can give the time and they're satisfied. It can be done. But you have to have enough passion to do that. So generally only Kshatriyas have the facilities and the power to be able to give that kind of input to satisfy all those wives. But we see here, he's lost it. He can't satisfy all the wives. You know? But it's recommended, it's best as one. That's why Ramachandra came. Ekapatni Vrata. It's a vow, one wife. So it's recommended. One can't take one. The Prabhupada said, if someone does have more than one wife, then he shouldn't be taken care of by the temple. He should live out on his own and take care of himself. facilities. He mentioned, there's a few places where he mentioned that if someone wanted to, if you want to live in the temple, be supported by the temple, you can only have one. But if you want to live outside, then you can't have if you want. But they have to be powerful enough. That's the thing. Because these things are just to get rid of, means the aspect of cooperating together in that, that's an aspect of rasa. We can do that no matter what the situation. It doesn't have to be done in the conjugal rasa. It's not that by cooperation in the conjugal, material conjugal rasa that develops the spiritual conjugal rasa, the cooperation there. No, cooperation is cooperation. You can develop with friends, husband and wife, with the children, with other devotees you work with anybody. So that whole thing of that camaraderie, that can be developed with anybody like that. But it, you know, just depends on the situation. This in itself is a big discussion, so we can't really deal with it properly just here. I don't know if that's very, there's an issue of that, but it's just recommended that it's better to not get so involved. About the duty and the attachment and not so much on the attachment. See, we're talking about some attachment, but here, two things are there. One, the duty, huh? Oh, the question was is that we see in the lives of the pure devotees, like the Pandavas in Draupadi or in Nanda and Yashoda, that there seems to be attachment, they like each other and deal. See, this is the difficulty in the non-Vedic upbringing. It's a specific problem of the non-Vedic upbringing. Vedic upbringing doesn't really have the problem. Non-Vedic does. Is that if you deal nicely with someone, then it has to be attached. If there's no attachment, you shouldn't deal at all. You know, it's 100% or zero. There's no grades in between. So that is a difficulty. That's just a statement. Then, One answer is, it's part of the duty to show attachment. The attachment may not be there, like it's, but you show that. Because that's just how you deal. It means, you meet somebody, let's say you meet some acquaintance, so you know, you'd rather just tell the guy, you know, just whatever you'd like, you know, which bridge you could go jump off of. But you don't. How are you, and this and that, how's the family, how are things going? Because that's just what you're supposed to do. That's the etiquette, that's duty. Because we're here living with all these other living entities, why we should give anybody a problem? Just because we like or don't like them, we should always deal nicely. Like an enemy, even an enemy comes to the house, they shouldn't feel uncomfortable. They should feel like they're, you know, a welcome member of the family. Like that. And then they go. So because, you know, two things. One is just this is etiquette, the proper training. Two is you never know when that person, you know, you'll have to deal with them again. So, you know, it's a future, you don't want to create a problem. So it's politically correct and it's also just proper etiquette. That's one thing. Two is also it's not that when you have two devotees that they don't appreciate each other and are happy being with each other. You have two devotees that do some service together and they're very happy and they appreciate each other's how they, you know, inspire each other and help each other in the service. It's not that that is not proper. It's not that that's not good. That is what's real. That is what the Varnaprastha realizes, is that the whole thing in the relationship between the husband and wife was that they were doing service nicely together and they assisted each other. That was it. It wasn't because of husband and wife. It wasn't that you bonded together a male and female body, and that was what was special. That was that on the day of the wedding or before, then you think that's what's happening. But then at the end, you realize, no, it was just doing devotional service together. So that's the same as, you know, with anybody else. some other, you have a service, you work with that service of that devotee, but that's the same thing. So we develop that gratefulness that this person has helped, this and that. Therefore, then they can retire. Because they don't need to develop and get so much more because of passion, because they think that it's really happening, this combination of male and female is what's happening. No, we have that attachment. So we put that together, but in that situation, we're simply trying to serve Krishna. So it's not that they don't like each other, they always like each other. But that doesn't have to be gross material attachment, that can also be spiritual. But love is spiritual. Love is spiritual. Material, there is no love.
Because like Vaikuntha Vedanta is just like that one and only one.
Yeah, okay.
Everything else is like just two.
Yeah, because you're taking duty as something boring, terrible, and disgusting. That's why. This is also the non-Vedic experience. That someone is out of, it's like out of duty, the husband, how you say, is faithful to the wife, takes care of the needs of the wife, that's duty. But now, along with that, it does carry some emotional sentiment. I'm doing this, I'm going out and working hard every day, bringing in money to take care of the wife and the family. It's duty, but it doesn't carry an emotional form with it. Therefore, that's why I said before, the emotions and the senses are engaged in the Lord's service through the medium of the Varnashrama Sadhana. Because they deal with the externals. So duty means emotion. What you see in the West now, they don't actually experience emotion. They experience attachment, but not actually emotional love. The feeling that this person did this for me, just to do it for me, that feeling, that is the platform of duty. And you see that. Why is it that you see, like, I mean, at least in America, World War II movies were, you know, raging until in the 60s, you know, as regular serials. And even now today, they still show up. The whole thing is that camaraderie, duty, and bonding between the living entities out of duty. And that's so powerful, they remember that and forget everything else. You'll forget all sense gratification for that emotional point. It's higher. But it's very rarely seen nowadays. They just take it if there's some emotion wells up due to the you know, hormones or this or that or something, some anger, some envy, some jealousy, some attachment, some happiness, that is actually the emotional platform. That's the lower. It's in between the pure emotional platform and the pure sensual. It's a mix. But the real emotional platform is duty. And that carries such powerful that unless you experience it, it's very hard to talk about it. And unfortunately, nowadays, not that many have experienced it. That they've actually had relationships that were so deep. And if you look at what is the deepness, just like you have a friend, that friend has decided they're going to go someplace. You know, today they're going to go to the beach or do something like that. You have a problem. You call them up and say, hey, can you come over and help? Now, the modern thing is, well, hey, I'm going to the beach, you know, I'll get back to you later. Right? Because number one is what counts. But no, that person gives up what is his enjoyment, comes over, sees that person, helps him, only out of duty, because of the friendship. That is the real emotional bonding. So when we say varnashram and duty, we mean the real platform on which human beings emotionally relate to each other, and which they essentially relate to each other. Non-Vedic cultures have no idea about this unless you go way back. They go way back to where they followed very proper, you know, Christian morals and the family unit and the duties between husband. Their bonding is very tight. You know, you can find them here and there in some rural places out someplace. But unless you go, but it's based on religion. Right? Those people are following a religion. They take it seriously, the duties of that religion seriously. So they experience that emotional platform. So when we take the duties of sadhana bhakti and varnashram very seriously, we experience that and it's satisfying. Because if you don't satisfy that, the whole process is to satisfy that. Not the whole varnashram system is only to satisfy that. It's not for someone. It's not that we care about, you know, being brahmacharis or grihasthas or vanaprasthas or nyasis or brahmacharis. We don't care about that at all. We have attachments. We have to engage those attachments. And this is the way to do it. This is what can be done. Otherwise, devotees nowadays, they've gone through these different things. They're unsatisfied. Why? Because of duty. So they've externally done, but they didn't engage the subtle body. They engaged the gross body of Varanasi, but they didn't engage the subtle body. So the subtle body needs the emotion. So that has to be, so when we talk varnashram and duty, we include that, at least I do. But most devotees, when they talk varnashram, it's just external. Who's in charge? Who has the money? Us. That's it. Who gets respect? Who has to listen to who? And that's it. Oh, you know, okay, the here, the wife is supposed to speak sweetly to the husband. Okay, so that means she's number two. He's the boss, he's complete megalomaniac in the home. And the wife just has to just do whatever he says, and that's all. She works all day and does that and makes everything nice and cooks something and speaks sweetly, and he just comes home and reads the newspaper and watches the movie, you know, and that's it. So that externally may look like this, but it has nothing to do with this. The externals is just how you set it up. But if she speaks sweetly, that means he's reciprocating sweetly also. You understand rasa, that's what it means. She's speaking sweetly, then he is also dealing very, very nicely. Has to. Otherwise, it's not rasa. So, devotees have taken varnashram, applied the externals of the body, and left the emotional platform completely. The mind, the intelligence, the ego. And because of this, you have devotees, they go through. They're brahmacharis, they're not satisfied. They have grihasthas, they're not satisfied. Sannyasis, they're not satisfied. Because they didn't engage the emotional platform. You engage that, you're satisfied. And then gradually you understand the real satisfaction is Krishna consciousness. And then you make that step. That works very nice. So you have to combine the two. It means the philosophy has to be combined with the process. We take one or the other, and we end up with speculation, or we end up with sentiment. We have to combine the two. Then it works very well. Is that okay?
So she also asked about nap.
About?
Nap.
Love.
Nap, no. And this emotion. Which coming up when we perform duty, this emotion can be spiritual, means can be mixed spirit with matter, or this only, you know, because when we relate each other, there are some emotion, you know, husband, wife, friends, there is some spiritual emotion, or until we not have a relationship only with Krishna.
Did you hear?
No.
He's asking him on this point of love. Mataji made the point of love. So what one is experiencing here, will that have any love to it? Is it spiritual at all? Is it just material or just that? Basically, what we experience here is the emotional platform, emotional exchange. And it's based on attachment. But it can be very, very fine. You know, very fine. So when we actually describe love, we mean the relationship between the Lord and the pure devotees, and the pure devotees and other pure devotees. It's another realm. We haven't experienced it here, so we can't. We call it love here, because that way we can relate to that there's something there. Just like you say that there's, you know, husbands and wives here, young boys and girls running around each other, then we can kind of relate to the parahiras, though we actually don't actually understand the parahiras, something else. But at least the external form of it we can relate to. Does that make sense? So what we experience is depending upon the Krishna consciousness and depending upon our advancement, there can be spiritual relation, a spiritual emotion, spiritual attachment. Yeah. I understand. That's natural. It means that we have devotees, we appreciate them because of the, you know, just whatever. But then the that attachment is due to something spiritual. We're not attached to somebody because, you know, they do something really good, you know. Like that, we're attached because of that service, and that either that service inspires us, or it, and we like, appreciate them. So that's spiritual. Or you know, they somehow or another it encourages our service, engages us more in our service, and things like that. It's like husband is supposed to be engaged in devotional service. His senses go wild, right? So the wife, according to Dharma, being the Dharmapati, he says, you know, no, this is not good. Cool down. So then he cools down, and then he's naturally very happy that the wife has protected him from improper activity, because that's against devotional service. So then that was service, so then he appreciates this. But we see it's on the platform of service. So spiritual relationship is on the platform of service. And if the relationship is only on the external, then it's not good. You know, then it'll be weak. It means we're trying to reestablish the spiritual relationship. In doing that, we're engaging the material relationship in the Lord's service. But what's actually of use there is the devotional service. Just like you have something very big, and if you touch it with an electric wire, the whole thing becomes electrified. But it's the electricity that makes the thing, not the thing you've electrified. And that's only because of the electric wire touching. So the relationship is inspired because of the devotional service. So it's not actually the duties and everything of husband and wife. It's doing those duties in the Lord's service. That makes, and then the relationships that develop from that, then that's fine. But these are subtle. So the problem in the past is that it'll be looked at as mundane totally. So therefore, those who are not in the Grihastha Ashram, they'll look down on the Grihastha Ashram, that it's mundane. And those in the Grihastha Ashram go, you know, hey, wait a minute, we were also, you know, Brahmacharis and this and that, and so we know what you guys think about. So there's no respect for anybody, because the whole thing's mundane. The whole concept of Varnashram and everything, but actually it's part of the process of devotional service, because it's engaged in Lord's service. So the relationships are real and are spiritual at how much where it's based on the spiritual plan. So thank you. Congratulations, Bhagavatam Ki. Shri Prabhupada Ki. Jaya Nairobi. Our service and things like that. It's like husband is supposed to be engaged in devotional service. His senses go wild. Right? So the wife, according to Dharma, being the Dharmapati, says, you know, no, this is not good, cool down. So then he cools down, and then he's naturally very happy that the wife has protected him from improper activity, because that's against devotional service. So then that was service, so then he appreciates this. But we see it's on the platform of service. So spiritual relationship is on the platform of service. And if the relationship is only on the external, then it's not good. You know, then it'll be weak. It means we're trying to reestablish the spiritual relationship. In doing that, we're engaging the material relationship in the Lord's service. But what's actually of use there is the devotional service. Just like you have something very big, and if you touch it with an electric wire, the whole thing becomes electrified. But it's the electricity that makes the thing, not the thing you've electrified. And that's only because of the electric wire touching. So the relationship is inspired because of the devotional service. So it's not actually the duties and everything of husband and wife. It's doing those duties in the Lord's service. That makes, and then the relationships that develop from that, then that's fine. But these are subtle. So the problem in the past is that it'll be looked at as mundane totally. So therefore, those who are not in the Grihastha Ashram, they'll look down on the Grihastha Ashram, that it's mundane. And most of the Grihastha ashram go, you know, hey, wait a minute, we were also, you know, brahmacharis and this and that, and so we know what you guys have. So there's no respect for anybody, because the whole thing's mundane. The whole concept of varnashram, but actually it's part of the process of devotional service. Because it's engaged in Lord's service. So the relationships are real and are spiritual at how much where it's based on the spiritual plan. So thank you. Bhagavad Shiva Bhagavatam Ki, Shri Prabhupada Ki, Jai Nairobi.